Womp womp, editing Jerome here. Due to some audio difficulties, maybe some sampling rate errors, I'm not sure. There's a low crackling noise throughout the entire episode, so I recommend you listen to this with some nice background music, perhaps some Vivaldi, as is fitting. But thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the show. Womp womp.
You hear they were calling all the Cybertrucks?
Yeah, I did hear that. Yes, I heard that. I heard that.
Because the accelerator pedals can get stuck down.
That is bad. There's no way that's the worst thing wrong with Cybertrucks, too.
Definitely not. Genuinely, I'm glad they caught it early before more people got hurt. Also, it's very, very funny.
So they only, how many did they sell? 3,000 or so?
Like 3,800, like less than 4,000.
They must be selling them at an absurd premium for that to even be worth still being on the market, right?
I'm not certain it's worth the premium given by Tesla's stock price.
Probably not, no. But I don't actually know. Let me look up Cybertruck cost.
It's like 80 grand. It's insane.
Starts at 81,895 and goes up to 101,985, depending on the trim and options. Ew, look at the trunk.
There is going if to
the, it, when the back is down, it just looks like a USB stick.
Oh man,
I haven't looked at. I haven't seen a picture of the Cybertruck with the trunk open.
In 5 to 10 years, someone's going to write a tell-all book about how this truck was the fall of Tesla, and it's going to be deeply genuinely
Jason
fascinating.
Schreier, get on it, future buds guest Jason Schreier, get on that. I know you just released or you're just about to release a book in October. That I should pre-order that book. It's about Blizzard.
That sounds good.
It sounds like Jason Schreier investigating Blizzard. Yes, please.
Do Cybertruck next.
Please do Cybertruck next. I know it's not in your... It's like not particularly in video games journalism, but like it kind of is.
And consider, the story needs to be told.
The story does need to be told. Yeah, I mean...
It's literally the Homer from that episode of The Simpsons where he makes the worst car in the world.
It couldn't have happened to a nicer billionaire.
Couldn't have.
We watch in horror as the bombs fall on the world once more. But this time, the people involved look like human beings as we talk Amazon Prime's Fallout.
Buzz, a storm of buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Good morning, evening, or afternoon, world. I am your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I am joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello.
Hello.
We are the Storm Buds, the video game podcast where all the segments are Final Fantasy XIV jokes. If you are just joining us for the first time because you want to hear as many opinions about Amazon Prime's Fallout as you possibly can, welcome. We started as a Final Fantasy XIV recap podcast, and we went through all of that game in our first 45 episodes. You can go check those out in the backlog. But we are in the middle of our Fallout month. We are on all sorts of newfound adventures. Next week, we'll be talking about Fallout 4. But this is a really exciting time for us because this will be the first time we'll be talking about a TV show on Stormbuds. Very different sort of deal. And so we'll be talking about the first two episodes of Amazon Prime's Fallout. The entire series is out, but Alex and I spent some time with some others who were not familiar with Fallout, and we watched the first two episodes of Fallout. Isn't that right?
Oh yeah, and that's the big thing. This show is so good. Show is so good.
Yeah, it's good so far.
Before we even get into the plot,
hope it doesn't choke the shark. Please don't. We don't know. We haven't seen past it yet.
Sure, but before we even talk plot stuff, like the thing that really struck me was that we watched this, as you said, with two friends of ours who are not familiar with Fallout whatsoever. Don't know the property, don't know the games, don't know the lore, don't know any of it. And the entire time those two episodes, man, there was hooting, there was hollering, there was gasps, there was laughter. Like, a thing that can often happen with adaptational media, with games that are based on, with books that are based, movies that are based on books, or shows that are based on games, or whatever, is that it can be alienating to people who aren't familiar with the source material. Mm-hmm. I think it is pretty incredible the degree to which this show brought people who don't know anything about Fallout in and got them 100% on board.
Yeah. We saw that kind of firsthand. So we'll be continuing to watch this as the time goes on. And maybe we'll come back to it in a side quest later or something like that. We'll probably keep it spoiler light, but just in case maybe our opinions might change over the course of the time.
We'll
but
see.
I think we're pretty high on it as it's new and shiny to us. So yes, we want to get into, we'll go over the structure of how we want to plan to talk about Fallout episode 1 and 2. We are going to briefly recap the plot. I don't have I don't have like detailed notes like we were doing before, but I do have some references to things that struck me, and I want to at least call out the sort of, I want to give people a chance to get interested in Fallout without having seen it. But I will say that these will contain spoilers for the first 2 episodes of Fallout or on Amazon Prime Prime Video. If you want to go watch those before coming back and listening to this, you can. But if you just want to listen to this to see if Fallout, the TV show, is something you'd be interested, then stick around and hear what we have to say about it. Is there anything else you want to talk about at a high, high level before we get into some going through what we like, dislike, what happened, what we like, what we dislike?
No, I think a plot summary is good. And then I have some more sort of like thesis thoughts about the whole thing, but they'll make more sense with the plot.
Yeah. I think that's fair. So let's just jump right into it. The first episode of Fallout starts with a very, very thankfully brief prologue of just before the bombs fell. So as we know, as we talked about for the past 2 weeks in our different Fallout episodes, we know that the bombs fell in the year 2077, so this starts in the year 2077, retro futuristic universe things. It's as if it's a realized version of a 1950s Jetsons cartoon or something, where you got your flying cars, your wacky ray guns, and your TVs that are still in black and white.
And also everyone is terrified of the specter of nuclear war and trying their best to ignore it by throwing a birthday party.
Yes, so they're trying, they understand there is an unsaid thing for probably a good 5 minutes about there's an unsaid specter hanging over the universe, the birthday party that we're started in. And there's a cowboy whose real name I forget. Doesn't really matter at this point.
Cooper Howard.
Cooper Howard. Okay,
here.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm like,
played names by Walter Goggins.
Yeah, Walter Goggins. Excellent job so far. He has this. He has this character, and he's hired to do this character at a birthday party. But this character has a trademark thumbs up thing, like the Fallout, like the Vault Boy, where you know you hold your thumb up to a nuclear explosion, and if it's bigger than your thumb, don't bother running.
Cheery.
That's sort of hanging over it, but none of that is actually made explicit until the kids are back in. They cut the cake and then they turn the TV on. It's a black and white broadcast of news reporters saying the world's gonna fucking die anyway.
And then you get a really effective moment where he told his daughter about the thumb thing, then the explosion goes off and she holds her thumb up and it's so dwarfed by the explosion. Yeah. It's like
The explosion is a mile away, but it's also, you don't see the explosion itself. You see a reflection of the explosion in the ceiling to floor glass window pane of the rich person's house. So it's just her beautiful big hair kind of mm-hmm. looks kind of cloudy, and then like it's sort of projected back the deep clouds coming forward, and then there's a shockwave and everyone's just running, and we get a brief glimpse of a caste system immediately forming, and then it cuts to black and it jumps forward 200 plus years where we are into the vault. I'm really thankful that scene lasted as long as it did, because it didn't need to last as long as certain other prologues.
Mm-hmm.
We take right into Vault 33. We are met with Lucy, the Vault Overseer's daughter, mm-hmm. And the Vault Overseer himself, played by none other than Kyle MacLachlan of Twin Peaks notoriety.
Yes, Lucy herself, played by Ella Purnell, who has been doing really good work on Yellow Jackets for a couple mm-hmm. of seasons, but this could also be like another breakout role for her, so I'm excited for that.
I hope so. We were really struck by her appearance, really lending a lot to
her eyes are so big
to the character. Something about her really fits well with the naivety of a vault dweller. I think that it's a really good casting choice, and she's doing an excellent job so far in her performance as Lucy. Do you remember the dad's name? I don't.
His name is Hank.
Hank. Okay, I will still forever refer to him as Kyle MacLachlan.
That's okay.
It's hard for me not to do that.
And so we get to see what life is like inside Vault 33. We get to, which I think, like, we get to see, like, you know, they live, they have a giant cornfield with a big old projection of the landscape. They, yeah. They are very open about the ways in which there's not a whole lot of them, and they need to crossbreed in order to, like, not have real genetic problems.
Yeah, and so, then they point to this guy who's got a big lump on his head and speaks really simply.
Okay, that's not great.
It's not great. There's a, and that's the first of many times where they treat a number of very serious topics with a certain matter-of-fact levity. I think more times than not, that's very successful. But in this case, and thankfully it's not, thankfully this doesn't happen that often, you know, with the great, in the greater context of the show. But yeah, that particular joke doesn't land for me. But other times where they take this same attitude, they, it is very successful, including upon, you know, the solution of this, right? The solution to inbreeding is that they trade, they trade people from a neighboring vault, Vault 32.
Which Lucy
Lucy is totally down with, because like, as she says, 10 years of cousin stuff is not a long-term solution. They have really mathed out this thing. And the cousin shows up, and I'm going to be real, the cousin's really hot. I can't get it, but
yeah, and really sad that she's going off to get married.
Yeah, so the vault trade happens. They're all everyone in Vault 33 is celebrating, and the vaults. There's apparently connected vaults, which I've not seen in Fallout.
I've not either.
This is unique to these vaults. Vault 33 and Vault 32 seem to be connected. I wonder if that's going to come back later. But the neighboring vault is suddenly, it's very dark. Lights on immediately, but everyone's really excited. And then some people with some interesting scars kind of come out, and they proceed to presumably having read. They don't explain literally another thing the show does, but they don't explain how these people seem to know it. But like, these people are out of place, but they seem to know all the customs and everything. So they proceed with the trade. The marriage happens, is consummated on screen consensually. Thank God.
Yes. There's a sequence that looks like it's going to get kind of sexual assaulty, and then it super does not. It's like,
yeah.
Phew.
Yeah.
It gets real assaulty seconds after that.
Yes.
But.
Because Lucy's gay brother, probably gay brother, goes into Vault 32, finds that the original inhabitants had all been dead or burnt or eaten, and tries to run back, but by the time he does, everything it turns out that everyone that is involved in Vault 32 or from Vault 32 are a bunch of raiders.
And hey, Fallout stuff.
Yeah, great. They do take it takes a little bit of time getting there. There's a dinner scene before him where they're like grabbing their forks with the fist of their hand, and they're eating like brutes or whatever, and it's like, okay, we get it. Like, something's like, I think the makeup was enough for me, mm-hmm. to maybe have been like, oh shit, no wonder they're all like super scarred, is because they're, you know, whatever. And
turns out they're surface raiders.
It turned out they're surface raiders.
And
so
violence
violence erupts, good choreographed fight scenes, lots of gore, and ultimately the leader of the raiders, Moldaver, kidnaps Kyle MacLachlan and the raiders make off with him, detonating some explosions in the back. There's a scene where Kyle MacLachlan has to choose between his daughter and six other vault dwellers, and he chooses his daughter, and then the vault other vault dwellers just run away from the
bomb.
It was a pretty weak trolley problem for me, that scene. And then the scene afterwards where the vault dwellers that remained were like, we have to be even more secure, was just unnecessary. Just like, show, it could have just, they needed to fill in an hour and 15. These episodes maybe are a little long for my taste, but they really could have just shown Lucy sneaking off and then having the conflict between her and her cousin was almost enough, because then some other people show in that we've never seen before, and they're like, you have to stop. And it's like, I feel no compulsion to stop. Because Lucy basically resolves to go rescue her father. And that's the video gamey thing. Like, she's the main character. She has her objective. She has her reason for leaving the vault. It's exactly like something that would happen in Fallout 3 or Fallout, in Fallout 4 as well, like a mainline game. Vault Dweller gets an impetus to leave the vault to search the wider world for something, and then you are just tasked with searching. Like, she has no other directions at this point. And we learn that as she exits the vault, that this vault was stationed in Santa Monica. We get a good shot of a ruined Santa Monica pier. That was particularly interesting and effective to me. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, and it was during that action sequence, during the big prolonged kind of eruption of the fight in the vault, like that at that point, I kind of noticed, it was like, okay, so we have her, we have her cousin, we have her brother, we have her father, we have a couple of other characters who we've kind of gotten to know. We've known these characters for 15 minutes, but all of us in that room watching that show were immediately invested.
Oh my God, like, I love Lucy so much.
The characterization of all of them kind of is so strong that
I want,
like,
Kyle MacLachlan to come back.
When someone we've just met gets stabbed, we all went like, oh fuck, that guy
got
stabbed.
The blonde lady with the fork in her eye.
Exactly. Like they got emotional reactions out of us immediately.
Yeah, it was great. It was great because they did a lot of showing, not telling. There's still, unfortunately, a little bit of unnecessary telling, but you know, it's a first episode. They didn't want to take too many chances of leaving people out in the dust. But there's a certain respect to the source material that is not they don't explain who the vault boy is. They don't explain what a pip boy is. They just have pip boys, and Lucy takes a pip boy and it's out, and she uses it to detect radiation and other stuff that pip boys do without being like, this is the latest Vault Tech Pip-Boy. You can do this and this and this and this with it. And it's like, oh my God.
This show is so smart. At least in the setup, this show is very smart as an adaptation in that it takes all that stuff and it uses it like accurately, but then also is not afraid to reconfigure it in ways that make work. It's like a story.
I don't think it does very much reconfiguring whatsoever at this point. I don't think there's too much... I think there's some I've heard of some controversies in later episodes with timeline stuff. I don't really care yet, so we'll see when we get there if we care.
I guess it's stuff like the tunnels, which like the tunnels aren't in the game, but they needed it here.
My thought is that's part of
experiment.
Yes, I think that's part of it. I'm excited to say, because like they're hinting that like. I mean, there are other vault. This is how it is in this universe. Like the vault wasn't this. Aren't these sacred spaces? They're contained, controlled environments for us to understand human behavior to a level that we maybe shouldn't. So anyway, I think I haven't seen anything reconfigured. So that part of the story is really great. The other half of the show revolves around these two other characters that aren't nearly as good as Lucy, frankly.
They're interesting, but they're not as compelling yet.
One of which is a Brotherhood of Steel member,
Maximus.
And the game does a great job of showing and not telling what the Brotherhood of Steel is all about. They're this reconfiguration of medieval Christianity with these monasteries and stuff. And instead of worshiping Jesus or something, they just worship old world tech and power armor. And it's a front for people with money to just get as much gear as they can, basically. Mm-hmm. And the way to get up in this is just, I mean, these are just a bunch of Sith Lords. So there's this Maximus guy
played by Aaron Moten,
who is incredibly handsome. However, this character is not, I don't like him yet.
No, I don't either. And I'm curious about this because
yeah, I mean, I there's think a thing a choice.
At the end of the second episode where he and Lucy kind of team up, and I'm
not
sure
really.
How we're supposed
to. Yeah, but like, it doesn't feel like it.
They're like a moment of connection where he gives her a
that's
quest.
Fair.
I guess like we'll see
he
where
he doesn't
go.
Give her a quest.
He says, keep the guy safe.
I guess. Well, I don't know. That was her own quest to be.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on this guy yet. I'm willing to like give it the benefit of the doubt to assume that something more interesting is going to happen with him.
Yeah. Basically, what's funny about him is that he kind of sucks at everything. He is just relegated to latrine duty. And he gets picked on, bullied on, all the sorts of stuff. He's bad in class. He only has one non-binary friend, aspirant Dane, and we're maybe led to believe because Dane gets picked up to ascend and then Dane's foot gets razor bladed in the night or whatever. And we're led to believe that it could have been
Maximus
who did that to his own friend. But and the Brotherhood really likes that. They're like, did you do it? And he's like, no, but I am willing to do whatever it takes to get in that power armor. And they're like,
great promotion
aboard.
For you.
Finally.
They do a really good job here of selling like the Brotherhood as this regimented space, which might be attractive for people who live otherwise in a world of chaos.
Yes. For otherwise misbegotten, masculine leaning youths.
Yeah, very much. It's
even like, even the there's no there's a the person that's most feminine is non-binary, and is only referred to with they them pronouns, which is great. Probably pissed a lot of people off. Probably all the kind of people that it pissed off would be people who would be interested in joining the Brotherhood of Steel.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is funny. I appreciated that irony. But Maximus is depicted as having not having, quote, the ability to hurt a fly, which is funny because as he's cleaning up the latrines, he goes into a hissy fit and breaks the latrines everywhere and presumably hurt one of several flies that were circulating all the shits. By the way, the latrines were just piles of tires.
Piles of tires on
gross.
The platforms.
This, okay, if there's one thing that's going to drive people away from this show is that it is fucking gross.
It's so gross.
It's cartoonishly gross in a Kill Bill way. In an ooey gooey Reese's peanut butter cup kind of gory, delicious way. But if you're not into that video game level gore, if you're not into that Quentin Tarantino over the top sort of like, oh, he shot one bullet and the leg went clean off, and then also you have to, we'll get into that later, but yeah, but like it's just like the special effects, the gore, the and particularly the makeup for Connor as he resurges as a ghoul, which we're going to dovetail into now, is very, very effective, very gruesome, but also very appealing and satisfying and candy-like. And, ooh, you know, they do a great job of respecting that part of Fallout as well. They're not taking themselves way too seriously.
This whole show is juggling tone like it's juggling knives, and I think it's quite striking how it pulls it off.
And that's
so easy to fuck it up.
Yeah, I just want to make the distinction. The show takes the source material seriously. It does not take itself seriously.
Not at all.
They recognize that it feels like they recognize that they're guests in this space. And they are playing around in it in a way that feels authentic and joyful. Kind of like how Obsidian did, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, like there's more New Vegas in the spiritual DNA of this than like...
Yes.
It's interesting.
Then four, we'll say that for now. We're going to talk more about four next week. But
I am going to draw a couple direct comparisons later in this episode.
But
I'm not going to go too much
into it. With regards to this story, we also kind of piece together, I think that, or maybe we'll learn this. I heard through the grapevine that this takes place after the events of four or shortly after, but also it's on the complete opposite side of the continent.
Yeah.
So it's also definitely after New Vegas, which is part of the controversy in the timeline, because there seems to be some inconsistencies, but I trust in Howard. I trust he executive or co-produced, I can't remember, he produced this show, he was involved very, very directly with it. I don't particularly think he would mess it up that badly. I think a lot of people are just upset at things they don't understand. I don't know, it's weird. There's also a second season of this coming, so
yes,
even if
just got renewed.
That by the end of this, there's any continuity issues or reconfiguring issues, they have time to address them, and anything can fucking happen. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, also, I don't give a shit.
It's Fallout. Like, this is so. There's literally any form of science can fix anything. Whatever, they can just. It's just. It's all made up.
Yep.
In a way that is. That's the whole point.
Yes. Anyway, wrapping up the episode one plot summary. Maximus gets the promotion to squire, which basically means you have to carry around a big old bag of equipment for the knights who go around in power armor.
He fails up until he gets a power armor, but like that's until episode two.
Yeah, yeah.
Episode one, we also meet the ghoul, who is, of course, the cowboy from California, who is in a coffin, who is in the nukes, but apparently still alive or something. He's kept alive with these chemicals that are pouring into his coffin or whatever. And he gets dug up by some bounty hunters who have a mission for him. They give him the details of the mission, and then they get into a fight as
he,
you know, this deal goes
him off and he just shoots them all basically.
And then he actually goes out and in search of the opportunity. And the opportunity is, the cliffhanger is that, the squire and the ghoul. So Maximus and Connor are ending up looking for the same person. There's this person who has escaped with Enclave technology. The Enclave, if you remember, is the scientists and the military science branch that thinks it's kind of the continuation of America, in new society. He has escaped from the Enclave with a dog and a piece of technology that we do not know. So he is the MacGuffin. And then we cut to episode 2, where we learn about this guy.
Yeah, this is the Enclave guy.
What's his name? Enricus? And he's played by that guy from Lost, the nerdy guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also...
You would think I would have looked people's names up by now, but I'm really bad with this.
This is Michael Emerson. He's from
Lost.
That's
right.
He is playing Dr. Wiltzig. He also is Leland Townsend from a show called Evil, which where he plays the weirdest, most freaked out man, like psychopath, murderer, evil, demon-packed guy.
Makes sense.
And watching him bring a similar kind of energy to this very strange scientist is extremely fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I haven't seen either of those. I just know he's from Lost. But I'll take... He's a fun actor, and he is a very neurotic person. And we meet him, and so there's this... we meet him rescuing a dog from certain death. And, oh, yeah, this show also contains bits of animal cruelty.
Little bits.
So if you're not into that at all, be warned. But the Enclave is running some experiment to try and breed these perfect dogs and any puppies that are under 10 kilos or whatever. Kilos, I don't know. 10 whatever.
Get euthanized. There's no whatever. Great way to put it.
I don't know what the unit of measurement is. I can't remember.
And he rescues the dog.
He rescues this particular dog, keeps her hidden in a hole in the wall.
And then injects something into his own neck.
Injects something into his neck and cauterizes it and keeps it. And it's like glowing. It's like a chip or some something. I don't know. And he, in the middle of kind of a training exercise with his secret dog, he gets caught by another scientist who pulls the alarm on him. The dog recognizes, he gets into a scuffle with it. The dog becomes protective and kills the other scientist. Wilkis, is that his name? Oh man, now is my turn to mess the names up. And these are just normal, these are just human being names.
Wiltzig.
I can get Orshifant, Dreamont, and every freaking fantasy name right.
Wilzig.
Wiltzig. But these TV show names can't do it. Wiltzig absconds with the dog in what is the least exciting escape sequence I have ever have seen in a long time. This is bad.
I enjoyed this.
It's cute because they do pull up one of the turrets, the machine gun turrets that you shoot a fuckload of, one of those same model of turrets that you see for 90 hours in a Fallout game. They don't bother to make another one, or they make them distinct enough to make them interesting. Anyway, they bring one of those up and then they shoot at him and the bullets make a Wiltzig sized silhouette around him, I guess. I don't know. He just doesn't... I was like, okay. He could have just not had that. He could have just gotten out. I don't know.
Anyway, but this...
It sucked.
He sets off to wander around, and this kicks off a slightly convenient segment where, like, just all of our characters are going to kind of run into each other in ways that feel like the world's a little small.
A little too small, yeah.
Yeah, because then, like, he and Lucy, like, run into each other almost immediately. He comes across her while she, like, lights a fire and then falls asleep next
to
it at night.
Which is in character, yeah. Like, ooh, yay.
Yeah, sure.
I'm camping. Ooh, uh-huh. This is cute. So she's out exploring, looking for any sorts of hints. He runs into her. He's like, you can't do that. And then the dog goes and catches a rad roach, which is freaking nasty. They did a good job with the rad roach. My God, is massive. He kind of goes into a long-winded scientific, oh, the roaches have evolved. Instead of just surviving, they've got better.
And
you have to get better like the roaches. And
yes,
she's like,
the thing he says is, if you will stay, then you will have to adapt. The question is, will you want the same things when you've become a different animal altogether? Which is heavy-handed, but also I appreciate them laying out the themes of this, like, up front. Mm. Like, sure, give us something to keep in mind as we're watching the show, I guess.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm you had me at heavy-handed, and then... my opinion was that's heavy-handed, period.
Okay.
Like, okay, yeah, I got it. I kind of just wanted to watch her transition into somebody else organically without the signpost, but maybe I'm asking too little of a TV show. So anyway, she gets a lead that there's a nearby town called Philly, which is not, of course, our Philadelphia. She doesn't walk 2,500 miles in the wasteland. She ends up, it's just a town built in a landfill. Instead, that's where they, of course, get the name.
Have we skipped over Maximus and his knight getting into that fight with the bear in the cave?
But yeah, she's on her way there. And then Maximus gets in a mission, but they're, of course, being deployed to Philly. And they're close to being deployed to Philly. Maximus Knight, Titus.
Sucks ass.
Gets impatient. He's like, oh, I want to shoot something. Drops down early. Goes into a cave. Looks for... And then they find signs of Wilkes, who had just eaten a can of cram. Great prop work. Can of cram. I was like, he opened a can of something. I was like, cram. And everyone else in the room was like, what? And then it just panned over to the cram. And I was like, yes. Yes, they did it. It was great. Really good stuff there. So... they found remnants of him. They're like, and Maximus is like, hey, it's the guy. And then Titus is like, I don't give a shit. Goes into the cave. He's like,
well, first he sends Maximus in. First he's like,
yeah,
hey.
No, that's what I said. Goes to the cave. He's like, oh, that looks dangerous. Hey, Maximus, go check this out.
Maximus is like, no. And yeah, he's like, whatever. By act of bravery, it's an act of bravery. Go in the cave. And
of course, you know how, like, again, it's a little like, yeah, okay, well, it's time for him to shit his pants. So the bear is on the other side of the cave, gets into a scuffle with Titus, who in the deep, distorted voice just goes, fuck this, and tries to run away in this suit. And I gotta say, the power suits, I mean, they suck. In this show, they do look like unwieldy cosplay because they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. It's kind of funny now. I hope it gets less funny 8 episodes in, but it is sort of just it does it. They don't, on their own, they don't look that powerful. When they were kind of in the unit in the military and there was like a lot of them kind of approaching the big squadron of people, they looked a lot more powerful. But just against, and not just because the guy wearing it was a doofus and died, but like just on their own, and we'll see another fight with the power suit later, it's sort of unwieldy, even with the guy with experience. I don't know. Maybe it's just because we haven't seen a person that's capable of wielding the power suit.
Sure,
yet,
yep.
To make
maybe
it look
Maximus
powerful.
Will learn to use the power suit.
Maybe this is an intentional choice, but I'm thinking still materially, even though that cod piece, that sweaty cod piece is really hot. Materially, it just looks a little funky. But that's kind of the deal. I mean, I've never been a big power suit fanatic anyway. So
oh, I haven't either. And we'll talk about that in Fallout 4.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's just maybe we're not the target audience for the power suits. Though the Magic the Gathering, the almost perfect card is still very funny in the Magic the Gathering with the 9-10 power suit. It's good enough. Then he heads to Philly. Lucy heads to Philly. Lucy runs into... the shopkeeper.
Her
she's
name
fucking
is
hysterical. She's got this big white Yubaba like hair, except it's all ratty.
This is Dale Dickey as Ma June.
Ma June. She gets into a conversation with Lucy about the vault. A vault dweller. Thought you were all dead in kind of a funny way.
Yeah, she's a great trailer line. I thought you dipshits were dead.
Yeah, she. But then things get a little bit more serious when Lucy starts getting kind of uppity. Like, you have vault tech and you just, like, I'm not judging you for that, but you should tell me who your criminal clients are. And one of them is probably named Maldives.
Something like that.
Lady Godiva.
She says, like, I'm sure it's hard up here with all the murder and the dirt.
Yeah, she's really condescending to this woman. And so there's a couple of really good lines that she retorts with, like, in so much as says it must have been fucking nice down there, but you know what do you think you're freaking doing? Like, what is this? What do you think Vault-Tec is? And at this point, Lucy is sort of stammering out, like, as she says the mission of Vault-Tec, she realizes, oh, this is not a good mission to have. She's
no.
Like, we're here to save. And she looks around at the death and destruction and ruin and all around her, America. And Ma June's line that did stick with me was, when were you planning on doing that? It's been 250 some years. Clearly, that's not what Vault-Tec is after, right?
I mean, and also, like, yeah, less heavy-handed here, but again, like,
really good. This is
like,
why, yeah.
Yeah, good, like, tension to explore throughout the season of, like, Lucy, like, what does she believe she is doing versus what is she going to come to actually, like, want to fight for?
Mm-hmm. What knowledge is she going to gain on this journey to find her father? And will she not wish that she could take it back?
Mm-hmm.
But the tension is she's booted out of the store without learning anything about Lady Godiva. Mandiva. That's not the name.
oh, what's her name? Her name is
not Mojave. Maldaver. Moldaver.
Yep.
Yes, got it.
Played by Sarita Chaudhuri.
Yes, excellent. Whose brief appearance so far has been really good. Very threatening presence. Anyway, she heads back out, and as she does so, she runs into Vilsig again.
Vilsig,
and the dog.
Yeah. And then the ghoul also runs into them.
Yeah, and the Vilsig's like, "Hey, it's me. I'm going to repeat everything I said to you at the campfire. You should go back." And I was like, "Cool. This exact same scene played out again, but is." Again, just further proving my point that the previous one didn't need to happen. Anyway, the ghoul steps in. He's like, "Hey, I'm looking for you." And at this point, I was like, "Why is the ghoul looking for him? Like, why did he even care about the mission in the first place?"
Yeah, I'm also curious about this. Like, why did he take the bounty? Or also, who did he take it for? He killed the guys who came to dug
him
up.
Killed them up, and he just, I guess he wants the money. Maybe he just wants money, and it's in a place that's apparently close to him, which is California, where he got bombed.
I think I have heard that we're going to see more of what's going on with what
maybe
Moldaver is
his
later.
Daughter or something. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, whatever. Like,
could be.
I think I have heard we're going to find out more about what the ghoul's deal is later.
Definitely can't be. Your daughter would be much older than that. But like,
oh yeah,
stranger things have happened in Fallout. So mm-hmm.
Sure. And then Maximus also shows up, and this kicks off a big kind of like three-way fight going on with various sort of like allegiances and things. Is like
not even three-way. The guy decimates the town, levels the town.
Sure, levels
the
town.
And Lucy takes the opportunity to go and search the records for Moldaver references, but realizes. And then in a great moment, realizes that she's the main character. And even though the odds are against her, she should do the right thing and take her dart gun and try and subdue the threat and save people's lives. And she does so. She's like, don't stick another. She threatens the ghoul, shoots him with the dart gun with poison. The ghoul's like, I'm literally a walking bag of radiation. I do not care about this dart. Like, it doesn't. You don't. God, you're dumb. But before Lucy gets gunned down, the. Maximus in this suit comes in and protects her. And then there's a bigger, wider, more choreographed fight.
Maximus flies around a little bit uncontrollably. Mm-hmm. Lucy tries to get Vilsig to safety. They get inside the shop, but the Vilsig has had his leg shot off.
Yeah, so they grind a metal leg into him in the most disgusting, painful looking way possible. Ma Jun gives Lucy... relents, realizes that Lucy isn't all terrible of a person, was willing to help out people in need, even though she is from a position of privilege, gives her an opportunity to get Vilsig to Moldaver as a bargaining chip to get her father back, gives her some coordinates, gives her a waypoint on the map so that she
literally
has
puts
something to go
Pip-Boy.
For, and then absconds with the thing, with the whatever, with the scientist. However, the dog gets injured in the fight and is left behind.
Which we thought the dog was dead, and I was actually unhappy about that.
He did stab the dog repeatedly, and
but
then
the
dog whimpered over. But
Stimpaks.
Stimpaks. Stimpaks. They do a good job at patching up wounds. Basically, the kid in the suit, Maximus, gets overpowered, gets run down by his own inexperience with the suit, and gets sent off flying. And this is, I think, the weirdest. There's a lot of weird segments in this franchise in this couple episodes, but this one makes the least sense to me. The dog who Connor stabbed, Connor then goes over to the dog, gives her a stim pack, and then the dog's like, okay, I'm your friend now. No, that's not how it works in Fallout. If you accidentally shoot a dog, that dog is perma aggroed on you forever, even if it's friendly, even if it's Sonny's dog in New Vegas. And I should know because I definitely done that several times because the dog runs in the way of my vats and it's like,
yeah, okay,
it's like cool. Now everyone in Good Springs is mad at me.
If I have a criticism of the show, it's that it's a little clunky at times at kind of like moving the game board pieces into alignment.
Yes.
Now the dog is with the ghoul. We just made that happen so they can be hanging out for the next few episodes or whatever.
I guess that's what you meant when you said sometimes it reconfigures things for convenience or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
My retention is low today, I guess. I kind of see your point now a little bit more in that regard. But so Lucy escapes the scientist, and the end of the second episode, the scientist is like, hey, fuck this. I've just taken a cyanide pill, cut my head off, and go. And Lucy's like, no, we're going to say, oh, what? Don't say it. You're going to make it. What did you say? Like, this series does the...
It's so good.
It's so good at just not wasting people's fucking time like TV shows tend to do, which is why I don't watch them.
No, I like I like how fast it moves. Like, and Michael Emerson delivers cyanide
monologues.
It feels
like it's hitting
so
the skip
funny.
Button for me at times. And I'm like, yes!
Yes!
Like, but other times, I wish... But whatever. Most of the time, it's hitting the skip button for me. Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of episode two, basically.
So we're really high on these first two episodes. For the most part, a couple of characters we're not so high on, but generally the whole vibe of the show is great. I think this is a really successful entry point to the Fallout franchise for a lot of people our age, maybe even older, who are into sort of space westerns and things like that. I could imagine my parents watching this, or my stepdad, not my stepmom, but so I'll have to recommend it, just with a warning that it is over the top gory.
So I've got kind of two points I want to talk about with this show.
And
these are things that I actually think it compares favorably to the games. I think it does this almost better than the games,
yeah,
at least in my opinion. You and I think, have different experiences with the games
a little bit. Stop me if I'm wrong. I'm the camera work is way better than the games.
Yeah, well, yes.
And the cinematography.
So a thing that, and I'm not going to say that all TV is better than all games at this, because bad TV is not, right? But a thing that good TV often can be better at than even good games, because I think TV has a bit more history and a bit more, like, just working knowledge of how to achieve this effect, is tone control. This show has really good tone control. It is able to be funny. It is able to be shocking. It is able to sort of, like, to be dramatic. A big problem I tend to have with the modern Fallout games is that, and part of this is just like engine limitations, doing it in game biro with these weird talking robot people and the first person perspective, but like, a lot of times jokes don't really land. They're just sort of like amusing things happening around you, or like dramatic scenes play out in front of you, but they aren't emotionally gripping. They're just they're sort of communicated in that way. This show, by being really good at tone control, is able to pull you into the events that are happening.
Yes, I think tone control and pacing and context in the TV show are much more true to life than in the Fallout games. I think the Fallout games have a clunky, dated sort of rhythm to them that in the previous decade was revolutionary because of its sheer scope and size, and that's where the TV show can't. That's what the TV show can't do. It can't have the Helios One subplot. It can't have Lily, the super mutant farmer companion and stuff. Or it can't have like all of the things. And it can't have a playthrough from your friend when you're talking to your friend that's so different. It's going to tell one sort of story in this anthological universe. And it's going to be really concise and clean, hopefully, as we go through it. Which on the Fallout game is just a different beast, because there is a clean and concise story that you could play, but that's not the fun part of Fallout. The fun part of Fallout is getting distracted, looting everything. Lucy is not a hoarder, right? Lucy is a very different...
Not so far.
Not yet. Lucy has not started... Lucy didn't even take the bobblehead in the damn shop. I was like, take it! That's so valuable! No one's looking! You said it was Vault-Tec property! Take it! But like it's the TV show is doing, I think what the TV show also has is a leg up in terms of artistic vision, because it has, because the Fallout universe has such a specific iconic design to it, and the props department. Props to the props department. The little mini nuke I saw in the shop, the junk gun that shot the baby legs into that one person.
This show is what I want playing Fallout to feel like. Like I think it does it so well.
It does do it so well. It's a great entry point, and I think I highly recommend it to anyone who is a fan of the franchise, for sure.
Yeah, and the one other thing I wanted to talk about and this gets, like, I'm going to talk about Fallout 4 a little bit here, just very early stuff.
Yeah, we're not going to get to everything in Fallout 4 next week, so go ahead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. So, like, the arc of this season, as very laid out by our scientist guy, is that Lucy is going to adapt to the world above, you know, she's going to become less naive and more able to take care of herself and able to resolve dangerous situations, and in doing so, will discover something about herself and where she came from, et cetera, right? In theory, that is sort of the character arc that Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 are gesturing at as well. It's the whole reason you do the Vault Dweller premise, right? Is to,
yes,
to emerge from the vault out into the world and encounter something very strange and be changed by it.
Yeah.
The problem that I have, and I'm immediately running into this in Fallout 4, is that within Fallout 4, I get above ground, and within literally 15 minutes, I'm enthusiastically blowing the heads off of dozens of raiders.
It's and ridiculous. Also, yeah, and the show's not doing that. Like, Lucy doesn't have... Lucy isn't using lethal force. She's using trank darts in mm-hmm. her gun. So she still has retains that naivety. And yeah, Fallout 4, you just immediately turn into a mass murdering psychopath.
And you barely ask any questions.
You like, do not ask a single question because Preston Garvey's really hot.
Exactly. Like, and it's like that...
That's why I didn't ask any questions anyway. I was like, okay.
It makes the attempts at having sort of like giving your player character characterization and having them care about the plot. The fact that stuff is so intermittent and so thin makes me almost wish they hadn't tried. Like, I'd almost rather play a blank slate than try to be looking for my son, but otherwise have like nothing going on internally. Whereas yeah. like Lucy, like they're setting itself, like they're giving it time to breathe. And I assume that we're going to see her change over time in a way that like that the games kind of just like drop you in the deep end of like, here, just like do whatever you want now.
Yeah, basically. So that is, I think, barring any other last minute thoughts, our initial impressions of the Fallout TV show on Amazon Prime. Pleasantly surprised. I think we were both in maybe February. We were thinking, man, this is going to be, we're going to have a lot to make fun of, but actually we're kind of laughing with the show. This show is it's a riot.
The show is so funny.
Yeah, hopefully it keeps the momentum going. If you have opinions about Fallout you'd like to share with us, you can do one of two really great things. You can join our Discord and talk in our general chat about Fallout. The link is in our description of the episode. You can also email us at stormbudspodcast@gmail.com. Did I say stormbudspodcast dot? Just whatever. And if we get enough emails, we can do a post-Moogle segment. That would be really fun. A reader mailbag kind of deal. But we'll keep this in our back pocket as we go through our quest logs in the weeks to come, because we'll probably be watching it together. Maybe once we're done, we could do a little
like
spoiler warning.
A final episode recap type thing.
Yeah. Not even recap, but just like
wrap up.
Thoughts. Yeah, wrap up. So that's really what a wonderful treat and pleasant surprise in addition to our Fallout loving lives. We are going to, of course, have a word from our sponsors, and then we're just going to shoot the shit a bit with some good old would you rathers after the ad break. We'll see you then.
We're gonna read some ads.
Hey, Alex.
Yes, Jerome?
Did you know that you're only supposed to wear headphones for 15 minutes at a time?
Boy, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, headphones can cause serious damage to your cranial skull and shape as well as your eardrum shape.
But you're talking about only over-the-ear headphones, right? Earbuds are fine.
Earbuds are totally fine unless they're way too big for your ears, and then they're not fine. It depends on the earbud size. How long do you normally wear your headphones?
7.5 hours.
Oh, wow. That's way, way too long. I only wear my headphones for 20 minutes at a time, and I still have a dent that's in my head that can hold up the fucking Ark of the Covenant.
I have wondered about your skull shape occasionally.
Only the skull shape and not the Ark of the Covenant?
I don't have...
Okay, great. Don't worry about that. That's not for you... That's mine. Don't touch my Ark. Anyway, I have a product here for that's really great for both of us. I mean, they always reach out to podcasters because they have their headphones on for way too long.
Seriously, we've worn these headphones for like an hour and a half tonight already.
These are the Blast Off Buds. These buds will remind you to take off your headphones and take in the sound of the beautiful world around you every 14 minutes and 45 seconds.
That sounds much safer.
Yes, by releasing a 124 decibel screech into both your eardrums. Every 14 minutes and 45 seconds, you will be reminded very clearly to take your headbuds out. Headbuds?
Wait, is that safer?
It certainly is. It's safer as backed by science.
I mean, I'd worry about the cumulative effect of those loud noises happening 20 to 30 times a day, but if you tell me it's backed by silence, I assume the study has to be sound.
Yes. Now, I see what you did there.
That was unintentional. Can you tell me about the scientist and how they conducted the study validating this product?
I could do that. That, yes.
You know, that's good enough. I'll take your affirmation there.
Yes, and they have a money guarantee.
A money guarantee guaranteeing what exactly?
If you give Blastoff $89.99 for 4 months, in a row, they will send you the blast off buds.
Is that a good price for headphones? I can't, that's not a bad price for headphones. Okay, sure.
Yes, especially headphones that are going to make sure that your eardrums are not capable of swallowing the entire Chicago River with all of the Dave Matthews in it.
This sounds fantastic. How do I give them my money?
Well, you can send it to them on Zelle.
Only send them a Zelle transfer with my address, and I get the headphones in the mail
for 4 months. You send them $89.99 for 4 months, and you will eventually get your headphones delivered to you on your doorstep.
So I get them after the 4 months of payment.
Yes.
So it's not really a pay later thing.
No. You have to be willing to commit. Because if you're not committed to these headphones, they know that you're not committed to your ear health.
You know what? This sounds like some bullshit some e-commerce startups are trying right now. Sure, I believe it.
Why wouldn't you? They're paying us to believe it, so I'm going to believe it. Head on over to Blastoff at Zelle.
Yeah, I guess.
Blastoff 6689 on Zelle. To buy your pair of Blastoff buds today.
I'm planning to.
Or 4 months from now. But start the 4 month process today.
I'm planning to.
And we're back. We've got just a few minutes left of the episode just to shoot the shit. I'm tired of coming up with beer segments, so I thought we'd do some fun would you rathers in a crazy universe of Fallout. So I'm just gonna kick it started here, right? Would you rather, let's keep it easy, eat grilled rad roach or grilled mole rat?
Grilled mole rat. That seems fine.
I'm thinking rad roach.
You go for rad roach?
I'm thinking they're like big lobsters.
Yeah. But they're, I guess, are the mole rats also super radioactive?
They're all radioactive. But okay, once you grill them, the radioactivity goes away somehow.
No, I'm sticking with the mole. I know what meat tastes like.
I don't know. It's all, the dog made that rad roach look pretty tasty in the show. All right, your turn.
Oh, shit.
It's fine.
I didn't prepare for the segment.
You don't have to. I didn't either. Here's how you start. You say, would you rather?
Would you, then
you think of a thing and then another thing.
Would you rather live in Fallout's Boston or Fallout's California?
California? Boston's a shithole. Oh my God. I mean, they're both shitholes, but my God, give me the space of the desert any day.
I guess Fallout California. There's a reason why it's so iconic.
Yeah, and just like anything could be around those corners and those tall buildings in Boston. Anything could be around those corners, and anything is, and they could also be up, which is not a thing in the desert.
Up is scary.
Up is really scary. So fuck Boston. Absolutely. Not in real life.
I'll say this. Fallout 4 is so far accurately capturing the experience of wandering around Boston streets and being utterly lost.
Yeah, that's what's cool about Boston. It's kind of like, ooh, this is
old. I guess,
where
there's not super mutants. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, without, I mean, even with satellite GPS and your Pip-Boy, it's just like, where the fuck am I? It's hard.
You like go down a street that looks straight and somehow you've turned north and you didn't realize how.
Okay. Would you rather fall in love with an enclave scientist, or would you rather be indebted to a indebted to Hancock?
I feel like
the mayor, the ghoulish mayor, the fucking undercity fucking mayor of what's his good neighbor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to fall in love with the enclave scientist because like that might get me on thin ice, but like,
yeah.
I feel like, I don't know. I can use that science for good.
Yeah. I guess the relationship, it's just like, would you have a certain working or like a romantic relationship with the nuns? I don't know if I could.
I would deceive myself into believing that I could like take their work and somehow apply it for good purposes. I would 100% fall for that.
I don't think I would. And I don't think the problem is, no, I don't even know if you would know what their work is because the enclave is so secret. And I would be an anxious, I'd be an anxious wreck the whole time, even if they're like trying to do good where Hancock's not. If I was indebted to Hancock, like, I guess that means I have. It would suck because, like, if I don't do what he says, I'm going to get a shiv in the fucking thing. Whereas if I get into an argument, I might not get captured for science or taken if I know too much. But I think I would rather have to be a fucking lackey for Good Neighbor if I had to. Even if it meant doing some unsavory things myself. But I mean, if we're in the Fallout universe, we're doing it. I don't know. I think your question was better, but that's what I came up with.
I got one.
Okay, good.
Would you rather have a fantastic set of power armor that makes you basically undefeatable in combat, but have to lug it around and do all the stupid charge management stuff? Or would you rather be on your own and be much more vulnerable in your fleshy human body, but also be free to, you know, walk down the street and not have to find a new charge capsule?
Yeah, definitely the latter, because that's definitely how I'm playing Fallout 4.
I don't know, man. When you get that power armor working, it feels pretty good.
Really? Like, okay.
I'm having so much trouble with the combat that being able to use the power armor to cut through a few encounters.
We're playing. I'm excited because that's going to dovetail into us into next episode where we're talking about it. But okay, we'll do one more and then we're just gonna head out. We're just having some chill chats here. Okay. Okay.
Hit me.
Sex with a super mutant or sex with a ghoul?
Super mutant, probably. Like, does Moonlight work with there? Traditional sex might be challenging, but
assuming they don't try to kill you. Let's just assume they're not being violent.
If you're Uncle Trump's, I can think of more ways to achieve...
Yeah, not a feral ghoul. So, like, you know, what's his name? Strong or Hancock?
I can think of more ways to achieve mutual pleasure with a super mutant than I can with a ghoul.
I think I agree. I think this will be the one I agree with you.
Okay, good. We're on the same page.
Hancock's pretty charming, though. Oh, man. I don't know. Do you have any other ones?
I think we're
at about time.
I think we're good.
Let us know what your responses are in the aforementioned methods. And speaking of connecting with us, we would really appreciate it if you were to continue to like, rate, and share the podcast with those you love and those you are acquainted with.
Yeah, share it with those you love. Send this podcast to your mom.
Send this podcast to your mom. She'll love it. So, what the fuck? Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate you. Next week, we are going to be talking in depth about our playthroughs of Fallout 4. I'm pretty close to done exploring the map, so I'm going to try and bum rush the story before we're done with it. I don't think you're going to be nearly as far.
No, nowhere near.
But I've got a good set of impressions.
I've done stuff.
I'm really excited for that. Really have been enjoying visiting that. I've also been posting clips on my personal social medias and streaming it like crazy on twitch.tv/JeromeHouse. So check out the VODs there.
We are in Blue Sky now. We have a Blue Sky account under StormBuds. So if you happen to be on that social media platform that I use a lot of, give us a follow.
Yes. You'll be a lot more likely to interact directly with Alex there if that's something you're more interested in doing. So feel free to connect with us on any of those platforms. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you all so much again for listening. Next week, Fallout 4. And until that episode, Born from Buds, Storm of Buds, we've been the Storm Buds, baby.
Good night.
Auf Wiedersehen.